Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of One Vision. Today, we are joined by Sue Britton, co-CEO of FGS, FinTech Growth Syndicate. And welcome to the show, Sue.
Thank you very much. I'm so excited to be here.
So before we start, can you tell us a little bit more about your company, which you have started quite a few years ago? What do you guys do and what prompted you to start?
Yeah, we tend to sort of shorten our name from FinTech Growth Syndicate to FGS. And there's a story behind why I'm co-CEO, because I am the founder and I have been the CEO for a while. But I started the company at the end of 2015, and it was really after spending 25 years in corporate, you know, sort of leadership roles, realizing that I didn't have the stuff to you know, sort of keep pursuing that next role and that next role. And I wanted to really try being an entrepreneur. And so I essentially took what I had been doing my whole career and, you know, thought I could make a business out of it, which was helping big incumbents innovate. And it was, I kind of approached it with all sorts of, I don't know, naivete and maybe, you know, unrealistic aspirations at the time, because it was the end of 2015. FinTech still was, people were still debating what the definition was, at least in Canada, you know, what really makes a FinTech. Thank goodness we're well past that. But and so I started the company to be essentially a, you know, consultancy for incumbents to help them figure out what they should do in response to all of this market disruption. We also had a secondary or a second part of the business that was, you know, helping them figure it out. So a bit of strategy and then actually doing it with them or for them. I sold the second part this summer. So that business was really successful and my business partner really wanted to kind of take it and go big and go in a different direction. So we're still, you know, definitely supporting him, but now myself and my, you know, kind of FinTech guru, whose name is Jeet Bhatti, we've taken the FinTech assets of FGS and we're relaunching the company. So we're co-CEOs. So that's the long-winded way of saying, but truly in essence, we really, you know, believe that the big guys can find their way to innovate and you know, get out of the past and into the future, and that's what we do.
Well, one of the things that I think is most interesting about entrepreneurs like yourself is that we came out of this corporate life and we knew that there was a way to sort of change the model and tame the beast in a different way. And when you talk about FinTech and when you talk about maybe the focus of what you're going to be doing or what you're doing with this piece of your past here, no matter what geography you look at, FinTech funding, especially hottest sector in venture, when it comes to Canada and FinTech, what are some of the verticals that you get most excited about and why? Tell us how you're involved and what gets you going.
Well, you know, I just finished a podcast with a new company that just launched in Canada, chose Canada after launching in four other countries from Ireland called Swoop. And a lot of what's fueling their entry into Canada is open banking. And, you know, and so what's really hot right now is the, I guess, plan for open banking to be launched in Canada sometime in early 2023 as a sort of we like to say, you know, a hybrid of everybody else's, you know, good decisions around the world, whether it's in the UK or Australia or elsewhere. We're going to do a Made in Canada open banking solution, and so there'll be, you know, it'll be part regulator, part industry. But yeah, so that's one of the big things that's attracting a lot of, we have 1700 fintechs in Canada, which is kind of crazy when you think about not just the startups, but companies that are operating here, anywhere from as big as Fiserv and FIS to, you know, Swoop, who's 90 employees and, you know, just opened their doors in Canada a couple of weeks ago. So that's one. I think the other thing that, we've been undergoing sort of a modernization of our payment systems in Canada for at least a decade. I don't know if you can say that if something takes 10 years long, that you can still call it modernization, but it's, regardless, there's a lot of people working really hard to modernize some of the existing payment systems, and that's creating, at some point, there'll be access to our payment systems to non-financial institutions. And there's already a lot of workarounds to get around being blocked by not having an FI partner, you know, like the prepaid space or banking as a service or what have you. So all of that is really exploding in Canada as well. And yeah, and we're also seeing a lot of vertical market, you know, cool, like interesting, both horizontal and vertical market stuff. Like small businesses in Canada are woefully underserved, and, you know, software companies and accounting platforms. I mean, Square launched it's essentially it's a deposit account, but it's effectively a, let's call it a bank product, loosely defined as a bank product, but to a merchant it is, right? I can put my money in this account and then I can use this card to spend it. So, you know, Stripe's opening an office here. Like, there's a lot of attention on the small business sector.
That's a good thing, actually. We in the U.S., the small business market is also very, very, very poorly served.
Yeah.
So I can't wait to see more changes happening there, because at the end of the day, we do talk a lot about small businesses being the backbone of economies, right?
Yeah.
That's what keeps things going. Let's switch gear a little bit. In the beginning, you talked about coming off from corporate life, and we talked a little bit about how the ecosystem has changed or been changing, or at least it seems like it's changing. So when it comes to fintechs, when it comes to incumbent banks, and now when it comes to big techs, we seem to be going around and around in circle about fintech eating the banker's lunch, and then partnership between fintech and incumbents because they need each other to survive, and then big techs. Where are we now losing track in terms of how do we describe the ecosystem, and what does the Canadian marketplace look like?
Well, I mean, overall, the marketplace in Canada is big and vibrant, and, you know, we've got lots of money flowing in, lots of money in Canada, lots of money coming into Canada. Talent is, I think, a big issue for a lot of people, a lot of organizations, regardless of fintech, just because of, you know, the pandemic and people making, you know, fairly significant change of life decisions, like moving to the country or changing careers. But I would say, like, what's happened in Canada is still, like, if you look to the actual activity, it's still very much fintechs scaling on their own and partnering with each other, or buying each other, like Mogo, which is one of the oldest. I think they launched in early 2000s. They're a challenger, you know, probably a neobank is what you might call them, but a challenger bank. Got over 1 million customers, and they've bought a micro savings company. They bought a payment processing company called Carta. That's a global company. They launched crypto products. Like they're sort of expanding to go beyond their first initial product. And I think that's more of what we're seeing is fintechs partnering with fintechs. The tech companies, we talk a lot. It's the same narrative here as I'm sure it is in the US and other places. We talk a lot about the tech companies and being nervous about them, stealing our customers. And if you're in a bank or an insurance company, and like in Canada, most of those organizations are marketing companies. And so what happens is the product becomes an extension of what was launched in another market. So the fact that Square launched, something similar to Square Cash, I expect we'll see Intuit do similar things. And, there's the normal, Amazon is more, with the pandemic in Canada, making it very difficult for retailers to deal with this, growing e-commerce, both supply chain and cost base. But we don't really see tech giants doing a whole lot of partnering with anybody. And then when it comes to the banks, I think like Canada has six big banks that are 90% of the market. So they have 90% of our mortgages, our primary accounts, our basic, financial products. And they have built their, our biggest one is Royal Bank. And I think they're, 80 or 90,000 employees. Like there is no, the technology is all built in house over years and years and years. And so there's still, I think, a lot of technology, cleanup happening and not a lot of, sort of consumer or business facing product partnering happening. Like in terms of, probably the most innovative one, or at least in terms of the question you're asking is, National Bank bought a company called Flinx, which is very much like Plaid. In fact, probably bigger than Plaid in Canada in terms of its role, because they started as a Canada first aggregator and now open banking solution provider. And National Bank has done a good chunk of partnering and M&A and with fintechs. But it's still, I don't know if it's so much, the incumbents and the fintechs kind of duking it out. I just don't think that they've found each other to be good. They're found good opportunities yet, right? I think open banking will force that.
Well, it's not dissimilar than a lot of markets. You have 5 or 6 very large players dominating, 340 million people's relationships in the US and throughout Asia and throughout Europe. You're talking 2 or 3 big banks. What's interesting, I think, about the opportunity in Canada, and it seems to be Canada Week this week. Everybody's moving to Canada. Everybody's talking about Canada.
That's awesome.
Well, and with due course, because I think in the next 100 years, you're going to see, obviously Asia is going to take over sort of the global economy to a certain point, but the opportunities in Africa for being sort of the most populous continent. But Canada, in the next 100 years is going to see a rapid influx of new people. You're going from a little under 40 million in population to what likely will be the most hospitable, climate friendly place for more people to immigrate to. And that's going to create a challenge to serve people well with 6 banks and with, VanCity and others that are sort of part of that mix. Mm-hmm. When you think about the indigenous community that I think a lot of banks have this question mark about, that's already in Canada, and you look at the community-focused fintechs that have arisen in the US and in Europe and in other places, including those that serve LGBTQ, our friends at Daylight, mm-hmm. immigrants or gig workers or musicians with Nerve Bank. Do you see those type of trends in Canada, or do you see them sort of evolving? Because banks can't just serve everybody if they don't understand them. So where do you think mm-hmm. that's headed in your market?
Oh boy, it's such a heavy question, because Canadians are, I think, in general, are very embarrassed about, you know, some of the things that have come out recently around, you know, the way we've treated the Indigenous population back in the 60s and 70s. And so it's one of those things that's making me wince to talk to you guys about, because, like, I don't know if you've followed any of that, but you know, we have some stuff we need to address and fix. And having said that, I think that we are starting to see some emphasis on you know, some of those, you know, community or solutions that are addressing a need for a specific segment of the market, because that need is, you know, whether it's geographically or demographically or what have you, like, different than just, you know, the average consumer or business. But it's only just starting. There's an organization based out of Montreal that is called FinTech Cadence. It's a nonprofit, and puts a lot of effort into building up the community. Because Montreal, like, aside from Toronto, Montreal's, you know, very, very much a community-based fintech market. You know, everyone knows everyone, everyone supports everyone. Toronto's bigger, and so it's a little more, and it's been around a little bit longer, so it's probably a little more competitive, frankly, than the Montreal market. But FinTech Cadence is a great organization, and they have an entrepreneur out of Mars. Mars is our probably most well-known public-private funded accelerator in Canada. It's called Mars Discovery District. And so one of the entrepreneurs that came out of that launched a group called Innovate Financial Health. And they've joined FinTech Cadence. And so, like, last week they did their, you know, they did a pitch night, and we saw 8 new entrants, of which half had female founders, which is nice to see. And then a number of those different fintechs were very much, as you said, Bradley, like, you know, but it's just starting. It's not nowhere near mainstream. And I don't know if some of it has to do with the fact that we're a very big country from a, like, a land mass perspective, and not a very big population. So, like, there has been historically challenges reaching and servicing people in our rural areas, which are, you know, like, some of our provinces are bigger than, you know, most countries. So when you have to travel to, you know, get to a branch or get to, you know, a post office, it's sometimes very difficult. So yeah, it's not a topic that, frankly, I know a ton about and haven't really studied much, but that also might be indicative of the fact that there just aren't that many companies focusing on that. But I think that'll change. I mean, you'd have to be, you know, on a desert island not to see what's happening around us and hear about what's happening, you know, at COP26 or from a, you know, sustainability, climate, diversity, you know, you name it, right? Like, there's got to be a need for climate finance related fintechs just starting to just become, you know, become things. I don't know. Is it different anywhere else? Like, what's it like in the US?
I think in the last year, so we have definitely seen more community-based fintech startups that has popped up that addresses different needs of demographics for Asian Americans, for African Americans, for Latinos, and so more of a community-based, like be it ethnicity or like what Bradley was saying earlier, LGBTQ. Or there's aspiration that addresses climate financing. So there are more that has popped up. I think it's an interesting trend because we are seeing something similar in Europe as well. And it's needed, right? Because it's really hard to have a one size fits all. Now, with that being said, I do hope we will see more actions on climate to address climate crisis and sustainability. Mm-hmm. I think what's been a little disappointing, if you will, is there's a lot of drumbeat and there's a lot of awareness when it comes to real action and looking at the impact. I think that's still lacking. There's so much, so many news going on. When recently I read about a lot of funds that changed their names to make it look green, whereas everything under the hood is still the exact same assets. And it makes you question, why would you even do that, right? Because at the end of the day, this is our planet. We have one planet. This is our home. All of us live on it. But, I digressed. But that was something you talked about earlier about the land mass in Canada. That was something we talked to Barb in an early episode as well, as we talked about financial inclusion and digital divide and how, especially in the last 2 years with everything that has happened, it just brought to light how many more people are not well served that need to be served. So that brings me to the point, in the industry, there are a lot of people that talk about the need to close branches because branches are not relevant anymore, or about cash is going to go away, cash is going to die because everyone is going to be using some sort of digital banking or digital assets. And what have you. I have my take on it, but I would love to hear yours. What do you think? And where do you think financial inclusion, true financial inclusion, will be?
I have actually a very, I don't know if I have a typical point of view on financial inclusion, but you're right. Like we have a lot of branches across Canada that would be considered, in rural areas, and, we need them, right? People are spread out so much geographically across Canada, with being such a big country, that, and digital is not, while it's, in urban areas, we've seen, near 100% adoption, out of necessity. It's not the case in rural parts of Canada, but so in Canada we have very few unbanked Canadians, like in the well under a million, and so that problem is I think is not one to focus on as part of this. I think the underbanked is an area where I sort of look at financial inclusion and say, what does that actually mean? And I think that for small businesses, I mean, I would say almost every single small business in Canada, which is 1.2 million of them, are underbanked. They're either in the wrong product, they're not served by their financial institution, or it's been historically been a very expensive segment to serve by financial institutions, but yet the only source of, other than, other sources of funding if you're a startup, but as a business, just generally, like, And then we've got Shopify, right? Who's like, one of our Canadian, major Canadian success stories, who launches Shopify Capital in 13 days in Canada and is now, probably 10% of the loan volume for working capital for merchants. But so financial inclusion is, I think, is a big issue. And but I think it isn't limited to, people that are without jobs or without sufficient incomes or without, it's also driven by legacy technology and too much regulation, and regulation that is just taking, I think we're one of the World Economic Forum, I can't remember what the ranking is, but called, but like, we're like, I don't know, in the bottom, group of companies when it comes to, restricting our ability to compete. And so like, yeah, it's an interesting topic. To me, it's all about, does everybody have a fair opportunity to get access to what they need, how they need to, where they need to, and how much is technology enabling that?
Yeah, I've long sort of argued that the sort of underbanked is about 90 to 95% of every single economy, because we're not placed in, what type of services and products people really need, whether you're a business or an individual or consumer. Everything is very much extractive in this industry. And yet we need banking. We need to be able to move money and to save money and to store money and to invest in money and to invest in companies and build up capital and leave a legacy and all of these things. And yet the industry has not changed enough.
No.
But they've done some things right on occasion. And we need to, laud them for that. During the last financial crisis, the banking industry, since the Great Recession, received a lot of backlash. And I think the entire fintech sort of uprising and the capital formation around fintech and all the money that's gone into VC, especially this past year or two, was purposeful. Now, with COVID, though, and the pandemic, some things have worked. Some things didn't work, but the banking industry responded and they stepped up in a lot of ways, and fintech alongside it. What's your take on what the industry, did over the pandemic in terms of good and bad? And, what are some of the things that stood out to you on either side of that?
Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know if you hear this from other folks, but Canada didn't really have too much of a hit in the recession in 2007-2008, and we like to sort of say that that's because our banks are very risk averse, and so we didn't get ourselves into a situation like other parts of the world did, and so I've always felt like the problem with that is that while we might have avoided the recession, the big impacts of the recession in 2008, it created a false sense of comfort with the way banks were operating. And as like I spent my career in, before I started this company, in pretty much most of the big technology companies that service banks, and I can tell you that the technology and the code and the like the resourcing, like it's a huge problem. It's legacy, it's old, it's, anyway, I mean, there's enough out there that you can read about that. But I think so on the one hand, I think our financial institutions have done a great job of responding very quickly to things like, getting, government funds in people's accounts. So we did a few great things from payments innovation perspective with Interac, who's one of our bigger technology companies in Canada that operate our debit system. And so together, and they're owned by the banks. Interact's owned by the banks also has some, they're not solely banks, but and so together they were able to get money in people's accounts very, very quickly, like days. And that can be attributed to, you know, email money transfer or e-transfer that is a system that's worked really well for a while. So that's great. But our regulators, were not willing to consider, for instance, having any of the alternative lenders help to distribute any of those funds. There's probably a dozen different government subsidized or funded programs. And they can, you know, still to this day, only be distributed through the regulated financial institutions. And so, you know, I think that is still a very, you know, difficult thing to accept, because there's no good reason for it. And I say that having been, you know, involved in a bunch of different projects over the last year and a half where, you know, we've looked to find reasons why a lender, like, you know, in Canada, we have one called Thinking Capital, and it's part of the Purpose Financial portfolio. They've been lending to small businesses since, don't quote me, but I think it's since 2010. Very reputable, you know, I think they're in the billion or so, if not more. Really well-funded, you know, and yet they were, because they're not prudentially regulated and because they don't report to, in Canada, it's called FinTrack, from an AML perspective, they're considered too high risk. And it's just like that kind of stuff just makes, because, you know, they would be happy to report to FinTrack. Like, there's this narrative about how, you know, because fintechs aren't regulated, they must be high risk. And I just, you know, it's just something that has been a challenge throughout the pandemic. But the other good news is that we're seeing Canadian consumers and businesses adopt non-bank products at a much faster pace. And I think that's, you know, out of necessity. So we've got a bunch of really great challenger banks. We had a new bank, a new challenger bank launch 2 years ago. The founder of Skip the Dishes, one of the founders of Skip the Dishes, which they, when they sold that, they started up a company called Neo Financial, and their path was partner with a couple of banks to use their license and offer a savings and a credit product. And they're, I don't know, in 2 years, they're 500 employees. Like, they're growing like crazy, doing really, really well. So we are seeing some, you know, despite the structure of the market, we're seeing good fintechs start to get scale. And when I talked to like Swoop today and listened to them say how they chose Canada because it's just got such great opportunity, and like, you know, they're from Ireland and they've got like how many other different places they could pick, I feel pretty proud that maybe we're getting somewhere. Like, maybe we're actually, you know, maybe the adoption of fintech like products is starting to really, you know, kind of go up the curve a bit. I don't even know if I answered your question, Bradley, but I just think in general the pandemic has, the banks have done really well. They've made more money than they made the year before. So,
you know, that's what banks do. That is what banks do. They just make a lot of money. And you know, that's why there's so much money in fintech, and there's so much money from venture going into this, because why should you make money on money? There's something that should be given back. And it's, you know, so it's good to hear that Canada has a robust growing fintech industry that is acting as a foil to banks. But, you know, given, you know, codependent challenges that both of our nations face, it's not going to be any different going forward. There's going to be a lot of collaboration, a lot of sort of need to recognize the interdependence between the banking industry and fintech startups and large tech. So yeah. It's good to hear. So we appreciate your ability to sort of create the Canadian environment in that answer.
And I'd love to say that I feel like it's starting to, like, you know, the ball's got to be in someone's court who has more than the other, right? Or it's their turn. And in this case, I think the ball is maybe not necessarily going to continue to be in the bank's court, because I think, and, you know, back to my comment about being naive when I started my company, and, you know, we won a bunch of awards. We were one of the top fastest growing companies in Canada, blah, blah, blah. But what I think is happening is we're seeing maybe this is, you guys help me sort of like make this, I guess, a more relevant point. But what I see happening is companies in Canada are embedding financial products in the services that they offer. So one of the biggest grocery providers in Canada, Loblaws, provides, you know, their money products through all. It's looking like, so I go there for my groceries, but now I'm actually looking after my health needs, my doctor's appointments, therapy appointments. And now I'm also looking after all my banking, right? And like, we're starting to see the financial product and transaction becoming embedded in something I do every day, like I'm using or where I'm shopping, or, and I think that's going to change. And I think that's why banking as a service is off in Canada, because, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if this is going to happen in the US or what you guys think about that as a trend, but the, you know, kick the ball out of the bank's court. I mean, I don't, like people say, you know, we need banking, but we don't need banks.
That is forever the golden quote that I shall remember. Yeah. It's been going on for a while. Let's see when that happens. Yeah. But anyway, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Sue. We love having different voices, and we love having different friends from different places, even though you're just right up there. So
yeah.
And for the rest of you, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of One Vision. We will talk to you all next week.